Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. WYTF's election 2020 coverage on Smart Talk continues today. We're joined by Heather Heidebaugh, the Republican candidate for Pennsylvania Attorney General. The Attorney General serves as the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of Pennsylvania and represents the state and its agencies in any action brought by or against them. Additionally, the Attorney General is responsible for collecting all debts, taxes, and accounts due to the state. Also on the ballot for Attorney General are incumbent Democrat Josh Shapiro, Libertarian Daniel Wassmer, and Green Party candidate Richard Weiss. And I will say that none of those three have responded to our invitation to appear on the program. Heather Heidebaugh, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us about yourself. This is your first run for statewide office. Tell us your story, the story of Heather Heidebaugh.
I'm 61 years old. I've practiced law for 36 years throughout Pennsylvania, 54 of 67 counties. I have tried almost every kind of case except a patent case. I've been very involved in community service throughout my life. I'm a mom. I have two beautiful children, one in medical school in the Philadelphia area and one who's a nurse at Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh. And for the last year, I have traversed the turnpike so much, sometimes I don't know whether I'm going east or going west.
So tell us why you decided to run.
Our current attorney general has made it very well known that he would like to run for governor in 2022, which would be 2 years from now. And if you put the campaign calendar on top of that, that means that he would be the attorney general unfettered for about 6 months, and then he would need to start campaigning. And I think Pennsylvanians need a full-time attorney general. In addition, in regard to the work that he has done over the last 4 years, he's changed the attorney general's office quite a bit. He likes to refer to it internally as the Commonwealth's largest public interest firm. And as you very adroitly stated when you opened up the piece, the attorney general has by statute requirements that the legislature requires of the attorney general. It's called the Commonwealth Attorneys Act, and that provides the jurisdictional springboard for what the attorney general must do. That's, in essence, the job description. And he has veered away from the job description, and I want to bring it back to what the legislature intended. And I think that has had real consequences. The legislature intended for the attorney general to be the chief law enforcement officer. And in my discussions with many district attorneys with whom the attorney general works, there has been a failure on the part of the attorney general's office to take referrals from those district attorneys. The attorney general has original jurisdiction in some criminal cases. That means that they can bring the case themselves. But in many cases, the criminal jurisdiction arises from referrals from district attorneys throughout Pennsylvania. And those referrals can occur because there's a conflict of interest. That would be an example. The district attorney has to prosecute a member of their family. That would be an odd example, but that's an example. Or because there's a multi-county criminal matter that needs to be handled by multiple counties and coordination is needed and resources are needed.
So your main motivation for running was that you were not satisfied with the job that Josh Shapiro was doing as attorney general.
It's part of the reason, yes.
Okay. What are some of the other reasons?
Well, some of the other reasons are that, you know, he's created these divisions that have really politicized the office. So he's created a division called the Impact Litigation Unit, which never existed before with any attorney general, to further this notion that it would be a public interest law firm. And what he's done is when he disagrees with a policy of the president, he then marshals the office of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to sue the president. Now, this, whoever the president might be, I disagree with that as a policy matter.
Really?
I think most of the time, most of the time and resources should be spent on what the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, I mean, Commonwealth Attorneys Act indicates the Attorney General should be doing.
So Attorney General Shapiro has brought numerous lawsuits against the Trump administration, usually in concert with other attorneys general across the country who are Democrats, by the way. But as Attorney General, you wouldn't do that, even if it was something that Pennsylvania would not benefit from?
So in my philosophical viewpoint, what I would do is I would really look at the matter before I would bring such a lawsuit. So he's brought, I think the number is about 26, if I'm correct. And some of the reasons when the press asks him why did he bring the particular lawsuit, he says there's a Pennsylvania connection. And I think if you look at some of the reasons that he's given as to the Pennsylvania connection, they're attenuated. So if there was a situation in which the President of the United States, no matter what party it might be, had a federal policy that greatly affected Pennsylvanians in a detrimental way, yes, I would consider doing it. But as a matter of course, because I disagreed with the policy of a party that I am not a member of, no, I would not divert the resources.
But when, and I'm not going to get too far into the weeds with this, but if the Attorney General sees that policy as being illegal, doesn't the Attorney General have a responsibility to do that?
I would leave open the possibility that if the President of the United States created a policy, let's say through executive order, which hadn't been passed by both houses of Congress, and it was clearly detrimental to a large number of Pennsylvanians, yes, I would certainly consider that. I'm not going to foreclose it, but I think it has become much too much of a political cudgel.
So, you know, we've touched on it a little bit, but how do you see the role of the Attorney General in Pennsylvania?
So it has both a criminal and a civil role. I believe most attorney generals will tell you that the civil division probably has actually more cases, but the criminal certainly is maybe the more high profile. You have to defend every single case in the Commonwealth in which the Commonwealth or its agencies or its employees are sued. So you have approximately 1,000 employees. You have agents. You have lawyers. You have supervisors. And it's necessary for you to get lawyers who are well-educated and experienced to defend those lawsuits. And what we've seen over the last 4 years is a number of errors in that regard. So on the criminal division in Luzerne County, one of the Commonwealth attorneys failed to provide necessary paperwork to the criminal defense lawyers, violating the accused due process rights. And so the judge in Luzerne County dismissed a case against more than two dozen accused drug dealers. In the western part of the state, the Commonwealth attorneys continually failed to meet federal deadlines in a federal lawsuit and were reprimanded by a federal judge, Judge Nora Berry Fisher, in the Western District. So it's important to have an attorney general who understands the law, who knows how to manage lawyers, who makes sure that the cases are moving. In terms of the criminal side, I have talked to a number of district attorneys who feel that referrals are not accepted. There is no communication with the referrals. I want to make sure that the Consumer Fraud Division is certainly active, but I would not turn it into an opportunity to make headlines for myself. Since the pandemic, there has been approximately 309 press opportunities created by the Attorney General to discuss price gouging, in which I think it was not necessary to create press opportunities for the Attorney General in that high of a number. I think that there has been a lot of effort used in a public forum to create a higher name ID for the Attorney General himself, rather than work on the hard work of being the Attorney General.
You said very early on that Josh Shapiro has made it known that he intends to run for governor in 2 years. As far as I know, he hasn't said that publicly. I know a lot of people have talked about that as him being a candidate for a governor. That seems to be one of your biggest criticisms, is that he's using the office of attorney general as a stepping stone. So, if the job gets done, does it really matter?
But that's the point. The job isn't getting done.
And just by some of the things that you're listing, and you're saying
there's a real morale problem. There has been a number of people that have left the Attorney General's office who have found my name on the website and have contacted me and indicated that they. I just spoke with someone who happened to be a Democrat who'd been in the office for 20 years. Who left the office because she was a lawyer who worked with police officers to defend police officers sued in the Commonwealth, who left who couldn't stand the politicization of the office.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to be in a position where I am making the case for a candidate, but I do want to bring these things up that the Attorney General would tout as accomplishments and see what you have to say about them.
Of course.
He said that, one of the things when you talk about morale, Kathleen Kane, his predecessor, morale was at an all-time low in the Attorney General's office during her reign as Attorney General, and she actually went to prison. And the Attorney General Shapiro has been credited with cleaning the office up, as it's been described, that the kind of things that happened during the Kane administration aren't happening now. He also would point to the sexual abuse, the grand jury in the Catholic Church that he investigated that got international attention. And, you mentioned suing the Trump administration. What do you say about those things?
So on the first thing, on Kathleen Kane, as you know, was the first Democrat elected as Attorney General. She was also the first woman. And there was a lot of excitement in regard to her election. Almost from the beginning, she turned that office into a political office because she was going to pay back her detractors and her opponents who didn't want her to become Attorney General. And if you recall, she left office early because she lost her law license, and she was replaced by Attorney Bruce Beamer, who's now a judge in Allegheny County. And he had the helm of that office. He wasn't her first assistant, but he was high up in the organization. And he helped turn that around for, I believe it was about 9 months. So he was making a lot of efforts to try to fix what she had done prior to Josh getting in. I think Josh has hired a lot of lawyers from the Hillary Clinton campaign based on the publicly available data. And I think he has begun to turn the office around from the low water mark that was the Kathleen Kane administration. And so to the extent that he deserves a pat on the back for that, I agree.
What about the Catholic Church sexual abuse investigation?
Yeah, so he did not start that. That was started by Kathleen Kane also on a referral from a district attorney, but he continued the grand jury presentment. It became obvious to him and his deputies that most of the charges would not fall inside an open statute of limitations. We've had statute of limitations in English common law since the beginning of the nation, which says, if I hit your car, I have, you have 2 years to sue me. Okay, so we have these throughout the law. And so he knew that he couldn't bring criminal indictments against these folks. Now, if you talk to most prosecutors, if the law says you can't bring a charge against someone because all of the elements of the charge are not there, then most prosecutors, I would say 99.99% of them, will not make a public pronouncement, because if you name the person, there's no legal forum for that person to defend themselves because you can't bring an indictment. And so he chose, contrary to hundreds of years of precedent, to name people that he did not charge. So they had no legal forum to come into court and to say, I didn't do it. I'm innocent. They were convicted in the press. And because the people that he named were infamous, they were people who had alleged to commit horrific and horrible crimes that society denounces in the strongest terms, crimes against children. The press most of the people who don't understand the niceties of what I've just explained congratulated him on exposing what appears to be one, you know, because we've gotten one side of the situation, what appears to be horrific crimes and horrific cover-ups. Very shortly after the grand jury presentment, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania had requested a commission prior to the grand jury presentment to discuss the issue I've just presented, which is issuing a report when you don't intend to indict. And they've condemned that practice and issued a report, a 72-page report. Members of that commission were criminal defense lawyers, prosecutors, and judges. Now, what Josh did was not illegal. The law allows him to do that. There's no law against it. But what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court Commission report indicates is that the legislature should change that so that if you're going to be accused of a crime, you should be indicted.
So you're saying
you have the right to come into court and defend yourself.
So you're saying that if you were attorney general, you would not have named those 300 priests and other people in the Catholic Church.
Would have named the people I intended to indict.
And now, statute of limitations would have limited that.
I would have named the people I could have indicted.
Okay.
And if I couldn't have indicted someone, I certainly could have referred to them by number.
So, you know, when we were talking about this at the beginning, is accomplishments that the Attorney General would point out. You know, many people who were victims saw this as someone finally listening to what they had to say. As I said, it was lauded by many people, even around the world. But you still say that you don't think the Attorney General acted accordingly.
So the fact that children were abused and it was covered up is horrible. And in Boston, the journalists in the Spotlight series uncovered it and exposed it. The journalists here in Pennsylvania did not do that. So the question is whether, as a society, we believe that it's okay in a horrific crime to violate a criminal defendant's due process rights.
Mm-hmm.
And if society is okay with that, then Josh Shapiro did the right thing. If society is not okay with that, and Josh Shapiro talks out of both sides of his mouth because he talks about criminal justice reform, you can't name people accused of a crime and then never give them an opportunity to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm. I have to move on because we only have about 4 minutes left. I want to talk about some of your priorities if you are elected. You talk about opioids and their aftermath and the things that the devastation that it's caused to our state, especially in rural communities, special interest groups using courts to do an end run around the elected legislature, consumers being ripped off by scammers, and corruption in government. Talk about your priorities if being elected.
Well, my number one priority is to reorient the office so that it's focused again on law enforcement. I want to convene immediately a meeting of all the district attorneys, invite them to Harrisburg, have a discussion about what the office has done right, what the office has done wrong, and ways to improve to make sure that when fighting crime, that all levels of government, local, state, and federal are coordinating, and that the press for the prosecution is not the goal, and territoriality is not the goal, that the prosecution of crime is the goal. And I want to make sure that all of our charities are spending the money that they have been given by the public correctly. I want to make sure that the charitable group is up and running well. I've heard numerous complaints that it's not staffed properly, and so complaints about charitable donations just lay there. And I want to make sure that the civil division has lawyers who have been trained well and who are following deadlines and who are defending the Commonwealth when the Commonwealth needs to be defended. Now, that means that when the Commonwealth does something wrong, that there is not a lengthy denial of that, and there is a quick resolution of the case. I want the Attorney General's office, you know, to operate efficiently and smoothly, and to do the right, be a law firm for the people. The other thing I want to do is I want to, in terms of using the bully pulpit, one of my passions of my life is the mentally ill. I believe that in the last many decades, what we have done as a society is we have criminalized mental illness instead of hospitalized the mentally ill. And I'd like to put together a blue ribbon commission of the finest advocates for the mentally ill and those who regularly deal with the mentally ill to try to come up with some common sense solutions to reduce incarceration of the mentally ill.
Heather Heidebaugh, I want to thank you very much. We covered a lot of ground. I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We did cover a lot of ground, and I wish we had more time to go over some of these things. With so much confusion, disinformation being bandied about ahead of the election, WITF's news director Tim Lambert will be joining us every Tuesday for at least the next few weeks to answer your questions about finding information you can trust. He'll be discussing WITF, how we'll cover things like voting process, what we'll be reporting on election night. That starts this Tuesday. You can send questions to WITF.org. That's news at WITF.org.
This is a previously recorded segment of Smart Talk. Please do not call in with your questions or comments.
The Chesapeake Bay Foundation and others are suing the Federal Environmental Protection Agency for not requiring Pennsylvania and New York to meet its agreed-upon Bay Cleanup 2025 goals. Specifically, the foundation says Pennsylvania is not meeting its nitrogen reduction commitments, and the state's plan is underfunded by $300 million. To tell us more about the suit and what Pennsylvania is not doing is Chesapeake Bay Foundation President Will Baker. Will Baker, welcome to the program.
Scott, good to be with you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Mr. Baker, why bring the suit against EPA?
Well, Scott, Pennsylvania citizens are really the victims in this. Pennsylvania itself has designated 25,000 miles of polluted streams in the Commonwealth, and that number has been going up. The current EPA has rolled back innumerable environmental protection regulations, those that control coal-burning power plants in the Midwest, for instance. Air pollution is polluting Pennsylvania's rivers and streams, and that, of course, pollutes the bay downstream. And, you know, with regard to Pennsylvania's own commitment, the Environmental Protection Agency and Pennsylvania have violated a multi-year promise to try to clean up the rivers and streams of Pennsylvania. But I really think Pennsylvania is the victim here. EPA has simply turned back the clock maybe 30, 40, 50 years on clean air and clean water.
So when you are targeting EPA, I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about is what Pennsylvania is not doing right now to meet those bay cleanup goals. But you're targeting EPA. What should EPA have done specifically when it comes to the bay cleanup goals, Pennsylvania and New York?
Right. So I met with administrator of EPA, Andrew Wheeler, about 2 years ago. And I urged him, with my board chairman, by the way, to help work with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and many, many others who want to help try to accumulate federal funds that are already allocated. So redistribute federal funds to help Pennsylvania farmers reduce pollution, which really means keeping the soil and the chemicals on their land. It's beneficial to the farmer. The Federal Farm Bill, which is a federal bill, has more than enough money. It really would not even show up on their books with existing conservation funds, much of which goes to large industrial scale farms in the Midwest and Far West. Let's put that money, a small amount of that money, to work in Pennsylvania to save a great national treasure, the Chesapeake Bay, which includes very much a part of the Pennsylvania's network of rivers and streams. And he just looked at us like we were crazy. He basically just replied with happy talk. He implied that it was fake news, that there was a pollution problem, and everything was just fine.
I think that you've just answered this question, but I'll ask the question anyway. The Trump administration has attempted to defund the federal portion of the Bay cleanup every year. Now, Congress has not gone along with that. Are you saying that EPA isn't even interested in making sure that the Bay is cleaned up and that the states comply in the cleanup?
Yeah, exactly. And there are a number of things that show that. Last December, the Bay Program's fella, the EPA's fella on the Bay Program, said, "Oh no, this promise that was started with all of the states in the watershed and a number of federal agencies under the Obama administration was not enforceable. It was simply an aspiration. Wouldn't it be nice?" But they said they completely reversed the prior 8 years of commitment to work together to get this job done. And, you know, it's not surprising. Andy Wheeler is a coal company lobbyist, a former coal company lobbyyist. So that he's rolling back regulations right and left, not just cutting money, but rolling back regulations that absolutely reduce pollution. And, you know, when you think about coal-burning power plants in the Midwest polluting Pennsylvania's rivers and streams, I mean, that's just wrong.
So what do you want from the suit? I mean, the suit is saying that EPA did not require Pennsylvania and New York to meet its goals. But what specifically are you asking for?
Right. So first of all, we would like EPA to come back to the partnership table and to be the self-described referee. They were the ones who said, we will be the lead federal partner. And as the only jurisdiction of government which oversees the entire six-state, 64,000-square-mile Bay watershed, we are the only jurisdiction that can enforce the rules that everybody has agreed to. Pennsylvania and all the other states each agreed to reduce a certain amount of nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment. So we want them to come back to the table, which they haven't done since this administration has been in office, come back as they were before and work with the states and do the job they said they would be, to referee, to be the arbiter. And certainly we think that they ought not to be involved with cutting the program to zero every year in terms of funding, but they ought to go way beyond that. They ought to work with their other federal partners to bring literally hundreds of millions of dollars into the watershed and specifically to Pennsylvania. You know, reducing pollution from agriculture is the least expensive pound reduced. And farmers are lining up to be part of a cost-share program. They want to do the right thing, but they simply haven't been met halfway.
And basically what you're saying is that there are a lot of farmers that just can't afford to make the changes they need to make. Is that, am I being accurate with that?
No, you're absolutely accurate. Farmers absolutely want to do it. They're willing to invest their own money. But just like every other industry, since environmental protection began many, many years ago, the government, federal and state, provides cost share monies to industries to help do the job. And in this case, the farmers just they're really the victims, is the way I look at it.
A few minutes ago, you said that it would take a small amount of money from the federal government to help Pennsylvania farmers. What do you call a small amount of money?
Yeah, I think we're all getting a little jaundiced in terms of what's big and what's small when it comes to money when we hear about the billions and trillions. What do we have, a $3 trillion deficit in this country now? But no, it's a large amount of money. But the federal farm bill has much, much, much more money than Pennsylvania could ever absorb. But I thought what I had said was a small percentage of federal farm bill money could take care of Pennsylvania's hundreds of millions of dollars of agricultural cost share needs. So small relatively to the federal budget and to the federal farm bill budget. But sure, it's a large amount of money.
Well, how large? What kind of money are we talking about?
Well, Pennsylvania says that it's $300 million short annually on the plan that it has. Each of the states are required to produce incremental plans to meet their promises, which started back in 2010. And Pennsylvania says it's about $300 million annually short of what it needs. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania's plan only gets 75% of the way there. So the plan needs to be improved, and funding needs to come from somewhere. Senator Yaw, who we're so grateful for, he's been a real champion of the Bay and of reducing pollution to Pennsylvania streams. He will be introducing legislation that will provide the some of the Pennsylvania share. But again, what we want to see is leadership from the federal government. This is a national treasure. It has been heralded all the way back to President Reagan as something that must happen. I've been running the Chesapeake Bay Foundation for almost 40 years, and I've seen time and time and time again the promises to clean up, to save a national treasure, go unmet. And that's just what we're experiencing now.
Well, okay, so Will Baker, you have been involved with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation for 40 years. Over the last 3.5 years, the Trump administration has tried to zero out the federal portion of the Bay cleanup. And as you said earlier, you don't think that EPA is interested in the Bay cleanup for the most part. So what would make them change now? What would bring them back to the table, as you say, and have them change here 3.5 years into this administration?
Well, see, that's the tragedy of it all, that an organization like ours, a not-for-profit organization, is having to try the last resort, and that's to go to the federal court system. Because as we allege in our filing, and as Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, the District of Columbia, the Maryland Watermen's Association, and others allege, EPA is violating the Federal Clean Water Act by turning its back. It's simply a matter of complying with the Federal Clean Water Act. And when you think about it, I mean, this is a national treasure. I'm repeating myself. I think everybody agrees, but I just want your listeners to know how important it is for the water quality in the Commonwealth's own rivers and streams as well. It's all part of one system. That's what science tells us.
Do Pennsylvanians realize that? I mean, I know I'm asking a broad question there, but when we refer to this as the Chesapeake Bay cleanup, it focuses on the endpoint, the Chesapeake Bay. Do Pennsylvanians, you think, realize that we're talking about the small streams, the rivers, the creeks that run into, that are part of the Chesapeake Bay watershed?
When I came to the Chesapeake Bay Foundation in 1976 as an intern, one of the big challenges was having Maryland and Virginia work together and not fight over the resources of the Bay and how to improve them. But since the early 80s, science has been very clear, and Pennsylvania has been a very willing partner with all the other six states, New York, West Virginia, and Delaware, or the others besides Maryland, Virginia, with absolute clarity that it's a single system. There's just no debate, and that's been for 40 years.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News. And all things regional, I'm Scott Lamar. Today's program, we're talking about the Chesapeake Bay cleanup. Our guest is Chesapeake Bay Foundation President William Baker. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation and others, Hua Baker just listed a number of them, plaintiffs a few minutes ago, has gone to court against the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to get Pennsylvania and New York to meet its bay cleanup goals. If you have a question or comment you'd like to weigh in, our phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. If you'd like to leave a question or a comment on Twitter, you can do that by going to smarttalk@smarttalkwitf. 1-800-729-7532. Will Baker, these goals that we're talking about are for 2025, 5 years away. How do we know Pennsylvania will not meet those goals?
Well, by admission of the Pennsylvania's plan, their own plan, your own plan, falls short by about 25%. So that's not our analysis. That's Pennsylvania's analysis. But it's you're right to mention 5 years is a short amount of time or a long amount of time, depending on your perspective. We do still have time to get this done. We have time not to pull defeat. It's just, what's the old expression? Snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Let's snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Two things you mentioned, though. We're not so much suing EPA to force Pennsylvania into compliance, although that's part of it. What we really would like Pennsylvanians to think of and EPA to think of is we're suing EPA to help Pennsylvania come into compliance. EPA could do an enormous amount with its federal partners. And you were talking earlier about, do Pennsylvanians realize that they are part of a single system called the Chesapeake Bay Watershed? Well, you need go no further than your great Penn State University, which has been a fabulous ally in describing how this all fits together in terms of a multi-state 64,000 square mile watershed, a national treasure. And it's all about helping Pennsylvania farmers do what they want to do, keep their soil and their chemicals on their farm, keep their animals healthy. It's about economic development in Pennsylvania for agriculture and a lot of other things. Think of tourism. Think of the fishing industry, the sport fishing industry. So there's a lot of benefit here, and it's just tragic. It's absolutely tragic that this administration has turned its back on what had been so successful for so long.
Let's take a call from Mike in York. Mike, you're on the air.
Both of you, as a longtime resident of Baltimore, of course, Chesapeake Bay, I'm very glad to hear this topic on the radio. I guess a couple of questions. One is, when you mentioned the Chesapeake Bay as a treasure, Mr. Baker, you mentioned the incentives possibly for Pennsylvania farmers, but how else would you maybe describe it as a treasure in tangible ways for people to understand? And then my second part of the question is, what happens if Trump is reelected? What possible planning would you have for that?
Well, thanks, Mike. H.L. Mencken called it an immense protein factory. And Pennsylvanians, I know, realize that in some respects, because as you drive around the Commonwealth, you see some signs that say cold beer, hot crabs. Pennsylvanians love their blue crabs. They love their oysters coming out of the Chesapeake. and they love all the great sport fishing opportunities in Pennsylvania, which is such a part of the overall system. You know, shad used to run all the way up to Binghamton from the ocean through the Chesapeake proper up the Susquehanna. So it's historically, this has been one system, and we just have to keep reminding ourselves of that. The other question had something to do with something I think I'm not supposed to comment on about a not-for-profit 501c3 organization.
But I think I, if I could speak for you, I mean, obviously, unless EPA turns and does come, you know, changes its mind and comes to the table, you'll be looking at much the same thing, wouldn't you?
That's why we are going to the courts, to the federal court system, to really be the final arbiter. And we think because of case law, past case law, and the fact that when the American Farm Bureau Federation sued the prior EPA saying that this whole construct was illegal, the entire federal court system said, no, it's absolutely legal. And when they appealed to the Supreme Court said, no, we're not taking the case, which I'm stretching a little bit, but in effect, I think that said, no, it's legal.
You know, we've talked about this many times as to what Pennsylvania has to do, and you've talked about it a little bit, Will. But with the farmers, I think it's a good idea to remind people of or provide some context mm-hmm. of what Pennsylvania farmers in particular must do better to help meet these goals.
Right. And so it, the way I think about these things is give a farmer, because that's what we're talking about now, you could say it with a company or with an individual, give them the objective and let them figure out how to do it best. So the objective is keeping the soil and the chemicals on the land. And there are many, many ways to achieve that, from conservation tillage to putting some buffers between the land and the water course. The other thing is keeping their livestock out of the streams. So fencing the streams, and there are and should be more cost share monies available to do this. It's also very good for the livestock. The large animal vets say that udder infections, hoof disease, many mastitis, et cetera, all go down when the cattle aren't wallowing in their own waste in the stream and, of course, damaging the stream. So there's another opportunity for win-win. Milk production goes up, but they need help. They need financial help to fence the cattle out of the streams and to put on conservation practices for tillage that reduce the amount of loss of chemicals in soil.
Let's take another call from Jake in Lancaster. Jake, you're on the air.
Scott, I just wanted to learn this weekend while renewing a vehicle registration, I learned about the KTRA, and I was wondering if we could hear a little bit more about that and how that's helping to close the funding gap.
All right, what is that? Will, what is that that he's referring to?
Jake, I think you said KTRA, and I know some things, not a lot, but that's one thing I don't know.
Jake, are you still there?
It was a Keystone Tree Restricted Account, a fund that's set up to help with this initiative.
Yes, I got it. Yeah, this is funding to help plant trees. Trees have so many benefits, from improving air pollution to holding soil on the land to taking up nitrogen and phosphorus from the soil. So yeah, very, very important. We'd like to see it much expanded. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation is bringing private money into Pennsylvania to help plant trees. We actually have a goal of 10 million new trees in Pennsylvania by 2025, and among other partners, the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. So from going from being on the opposite sides to being on the same side, that's the kind of thing that puts a smile on my face.
You know, Will, this question may seem out of left field, But there has been a lot of attention. I saw probably three stories this weekend in newspapers about the spotted lanternfly. Invasive species like that spotted lanternfly, when the Chesapeake Bay Foundation is trying to plant 10 million trees, and you're fighting an invasive species, not you necessarily, but we're fighting an invasive species that kills trees. I mean, these things are all kind of related, aren't they?
They really are. And you could also extend that to the intensity of storms. And this all falls under the rubric of climate change. So the change of species distribution in this world have been greatly affected by climate change. You know, we need look no further than Louisiana, the West, and the kind of storms and flooding that Pennsylvania suffered from in the last 24 months. This is another thing where this administration not only turns back regulations, they deny the very existence of climate change. It's just beyond belief.
So a couple things here. Pennsylvania is on track, admittedly, to meet 75% of its pollution diet. You mentioned that Senator Gene Yaw is planning to introduce some legislation, $300 million short of what would be needed here in Pennsylvania. Now, I know that during our conversation, you've talked about the EPA helping with that financial commitment. But if that doesn't happen, the $300 million that Pennsylvania is short, I mean, right now, Pennsylvania is looking at a $5 billion budget deficit because of the pandemic. Doesn't seem to be that it would be able to come up with $300 million when there's a $5 million or billion-dollar budget deficit. What do you think?
Well, I can't comment on why Pennsylvania legislators don't balance the budget. I have some opinions. The oil and gas industry, for instance, seems like it should be paying more of its fair share for the kind of impacts they've had in Pennsylvania, some positive, many negative. But that's really not my prerogative to say where or how. We want Gene Yaw's legislation to pass. We've worked closely with him. We think he's a champion. But really, this is where EPA needs to come in and say, as part of a national challenge, which started with President Reagan to save the Chesapeake Bay, we're going to work with our federal partners, especially the USDA, which has hundreds of billions of dollars available over the years to support farmers in Pennsylvania. Let's get one thing that we know how to do, and the science is absolutely clear. Take it from Penn State. What needs to be done? Let's take one part of this country that we've had a multi-decade commitment to and finish the job. We're that close. We can do this if we get the right kind of cooperation out of the federal government.
Well, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation puts out report cards from time to time on the health of the bay. But just so everyone knows, how would you describe the health of the bay today? From what I understand, it is much better than when this started. But how would you describe the health of the bay?
I might not say much better, but I certainly would say better. We snuck up from a basically an F 40 years ago, 50 years ago, to a C-. We were so thrilled that our biannual report card got to a C-. And then all of those rains came 2 years ago, and they really drove the report back down to a D+. We'll be issuing the report again this December, so we haven't done one for 2 years. We're looking at all the metrics, and we'll see where the number is when it comes out.
Chesapeake Bay Foundation President Will Baker. Will, thank you very much for being with us today.
Scott, I really appreciate your attention to this for many, many years. Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.